I don't know. And I'm sure those words are true. We don't know how it is that God works in these things, but we know Him. What an amazing truth. What a great thing to sing about and to praise God regarding. Our sermon tonight, our Bible study, is probably more like it, is from Luke chapter 12, as I've already mentioned. Please turn there if you haven't already. It's in verses 13 through 21 is the passage that really stuck out to me this week as I was thinking, what should I prepare for in the coming week? Luke chapter 12, verses 13 through 21 says this: someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Jesus replied, "Man, who appointed me as a judge or an arbiter between you?" Then he said to them, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." And he told them this parable: the ground of a certain rich man produced a good crop. He thought to himself, "What should I do? I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "This is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I'll say to myself, 'You have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself?' This is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself but is not rich toward God." Now, obviously, even a casual reading of this passage instructs us that what Jesus was doing was answering this person who came to him with this question, with this demand, really: tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. As you're probably well aware, in the Hebrew culture, the firstborn was very, very emphasized, and the second children and the third child and the fourth child, they weren't neglected, but they were not given as much as the firstborn. The firstborn would always have the lion's share at dinner. They would always have the best and cushiest jobs. And then when the estate passed on from the deceased father, the firstborn would receive the lion's share of that estate. It came to be, at one point, it would have been all of the estate. And it came to, at this point in the Jewish culture, that the firstborn would receive twice or three times as much as the other children, depending on how many children there were. And of course, just as we have today, when there's a will, there's a fight, you have children, the second and third born, who feel passed over, or they feel as though it's not fair that the firstborn gets so much and I get so little with which to do with my life. And so I'm assuming this is a secondborn, someone much like myself, going to Jesus and saying, tell him to divide the inheritance with me. Tell him to divide it more fairly that we might live together in peace and prosperity and have happiness, so on and so forth. And Jesus' answer is very, very interesting. It's not, I want to do what is fair. It's not, go and do what is just. It's not even point towards the scripture and the requirements that are laid out in the law. It's, this isn't my job. I wasn't sent here to decide these types of issues, because what I'm here for is something much deeper. And his entire answer tells us what that is so much more deep. And I believe there are at least five things, but I've come up with five reflections, really, that help us narrow in on some of the thrust of this passage, trying to expound upon the lessons that this has to teach us. There are five things. First, no one knows the length of his life. Second, you are not your bank account. Thirdly, God is the only security that we have. Fourthly, things are not evil, but only the unhealthy love of things. And fifthly, retirement and leisure are inadequate ultimate goals in life. Okay, so if you're following along, we're going to be on point number one. No one knows the length of his life. Obviously, God does want us to be wise in our financial and in our future planning. When we are called to worry only about today in Matthew chapter 6 and other places, this does not mean foolishly splurging all that we have. I have this resource today. I can't worry about tomorrow, so I'm just going to spend that resource today in whatever living I feel like is necessary. That's not what it means. We're not to fail to save. We are to save for the future. We are to be careful stewards of all that we have. And that includes sound financial planning. That includes retirement accounts and IRAs and good tax preparation and all of these types of things. Yet we are to understand that God does not guarantee a breath beyond our current one. The man in our story, he said, I'll tear down my barns, I'll build bigger ones. We might put it this way, I'll withdraw my money out of this CD, this certificate of deposit, and put it in this one, because this one's a 48-month certificate of deposit, which has a much higher yield than this one. And God says, well, how do you know you're going to even be around 48 months from now in order to receive that money? No one knows the length of his life. In other words, we are to live each moment toward God. Never take a day for granted might be a lesson we learn from this man in this story. He was just on the cusp of what we would call retirement. He was saying, I'm going to kick back and take it easy now for the rest of my life. But he wasn't living his days for God. He was living his days for these things that he was accumulating. I was told by one of my professors at Toccoa that a preacher, a pastor, needed to be ready at any moment to preach, pray, or die. I think that is true for any Christian. Not necessarily preach as we think of a preacher standing up front in a suit and gesturing and having notes and all that type of thing, but to be able to share the gospel, ready at any moment to share the gospel, ready at any moment to pray for someone, whether they know it or not, and ready at any moment to die. Living each day with the full awareness that our every breath comes from Him and it is not guaranteed by our workout habits or by the money that we have in the bank. And the sinner should certainly not think to themselves, I'll enjoy a life of sin while I'm young and turn to God later. I've got plenty of time. There's no need to rush into this religion thing. That's for old people and people who are frightened. I'm a young guy. I'm a young buck. I'm really just ready to live life, and I think that doing that thing right now would cramp my style. I don't even know if people talk like that. It doesn't matter. Because that's not the attitude we are to have. That is an attitude that is bound for destruction in so many ways. I want to read it's not that lengthy. It's only two sentences, but the first sentence is rather lengthy. A quote from one of my favorite sermons ever written. I've talked about Jonathan Edwards before, and you may have heard someone preach Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God. You may have read it yourself, but it is his last paragraph of his opening theological monologue in this sermon before he gets to the application. And he says this about the natural man, about the sinner who would be resting not upon God, but upon their own strength. He says this, so that thus it is that natural men are held in the hand of God over the pit of hell. They have deserved the fiery pit and are already sentenced to it, and God is dreadfully provoked. His anger is as great toward them as to those who are actually suffering the executions of the fierceness of his wrath in hell, and they have done nothing in the least to appease or abate that anger. Neither is God in the least bound by any promise to hold them up one moment. The devil is waiting for them. Hell is gaping for them. The flames gather and flash about them and would fain lay hold on them and swallow them up. The fire pent up in their own hearts is struggling to break out, and they have no interest in any mediator. There are no means within reach that can be any security to them. In short, they have no refuge, nothing to take hold of. All that preserves them every moment is the mere arbitrary will and uncovenanted, unobliged forbearance of an incensed God. People were running to the front, to the altar, when this man preached. And this is not really typical of him, but it is true that God is the one who holds our lives in His hand. He is the one who determines from one moment to the other whether or not we will die. And we need to be ready for that moment. We need to have our hope firmly planted in the God who holds us. Because if we trust in anything else, if we think that we have plenty of time with which to perfect ourselves, with which to get our lives right, we're joking ourselves. No one of us knows that we have another breath in this place. See a Far Side comic where there's a young gentleman steps off the curb into the street and all of a sudden is just plowed over by a truck that says old age on the truck. And the caption at the bottom says, no one sees it coming. It's also true of death. If we could talk to any person at any moment who has just died and crossed over to the other side, very, very few of them would say, yeah, I expected it to come like that. But rather, death comes as a thief more often than not, and we do not know the length of our lives. This man was a fool in our passage because he was rich in this world and he had planned for his future, but he had not planned for his eternity. So that's number one. No one knows the length of his life. Number two, you are not your bank account. That is a fabulous thing to understand. Money is the be-all and the end-all in America today. It gets you power and fame, and it gets you stuff. You know, it gets you a boat. It gets you a house. It gets you a nice car. A boat is sometimes called a hole in the water into which you throw money. I'm sure some of you are well aware of that. And it can buy you happiness for a short amount of time, but it's not who you are. This man was rich. He had a great crop. He was probably well regarded. What he said was, on the surface, very smart, financially sound. And he was probably well regarded by all the people of his town, but he was not very well regarded by God. God said to him, you fool. People will do anything, even sell their dignity for money in America today. Yet we know that money does not build character. Money does not bring happiness. Think about all the poor rich people that we know just from the news of the last week or two. Michael Jackson. Colin Farrell. Paris Hilton. Ted Turner. There's a guy who's not very happy. Martha Stewart, Janet Jackson, so on and so on and so on and so on. People that are unbelievably, fabulously, incredibly, mucho, mucho rich, and yet lack everything of good character that we could possibly describe. You are so much more than what you own. So use what time and resources and energy God has given to you wisely to invest in becoming a person of character, in becoming a person like Christ. Invest it so that when we reach the end of our lives, even if we do have the great barns that are full of all sorts of stuff, God does not look down and say, you fool, but says, here is a wise man, a wise person who has done well with what I have given to him. You are not your bank account, but you are to be a person of character. Number three, God is the only security of life. This is related, of course, to number two. So many people throw all of their hopes and dreams and aspirations onto their bank account or onto their health. If you haven't got your health, you haven't got anything, right? But having health or money, a good home, education, family, a car, insurance, social security, so on and so on and so on, will not add a moment to the length of our days. In Psalm chapter 139, in verse 16, God says this, well, the psalmist says this, "All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be." In other words, he holds us. He holds us in his hand, and he is our security. Yet to those who hope in God, though lacking everything else, we have security for the future. Augustine, St. Augustine, way back in 300 or so A.D., said this, "He who has everything in the world and lacks the Son has nothing. He who lacks everything in the world yet has the Son has everything. He who has everything the world offers and has the Son has no more than the one who has the Son only." God is the only security of life. And whatever else he has blessed us with, whether it is health or life or happiness or joy or a family or money, whatever else he has given to us is not a security, but is something to be used for his gain in our lives. God is the only security that we have in life. Fourthly, things themselves are not evil, but only the unhealthy love of things. We don't know the man's heart here, but it's important to note it is not because this man stored up wealth for himself that he was killed, so to speak. It wasn't God looking down and saying, oh, he didn't distribute fairly among all of his workers, among all the people of the town and the nation, and so I'm going to judge him. That's not what was going on here. This man owned the land. He had every right to the things that he had produced, but it was not God's judgment on him for being rich. It was God's judgment on him, so to speak. The label of fool was God's judgment on him for being foolish with what he had, for being poor towards God. Things themselves, whether toys or houses or cars that are toys, whatever, are immoral. That is, they're neither good or bad. But it is the use of the things, our attachment to the things, that determines whether they are good or bad. I've said it often that sin is really a matter of the heart. It is a matter of our motivation, much more than it is what we do. Because two people can do the same thing, and one sins and the other does not. That's a very interesting thing to know. The illustration I've used with that is Jesus laid down, he gave himself over to the cross. God the Father gave Jesus over to be crucified. Judas Iscariot gave Jesus over to be crucified. In effect, what they had done was the same thing, but Judas was condemned for it. Why? Because his motive was very, very bad. Self-gain. Even for 30 pieces of silver, self-motivation rather than the pure motivation of God. Very interesting. And so things become evil to us in the same way when they replace God in our lives. Things can become our security, such as it was with this man. I'm going to take life easy. Life will be grand from here on out because I have these things. And that was really an evil for him to think in that way, because his security was not found in God. His security was found in his barns, which could burn down the next spring or the next day. How many people in this nation is their security found in their retirement account or in Wall Street? I often think, what happens if there's this great global catastrophe? What happens in that moment when all of a sudden money doesn't buy you anything? Where is the security of people at that point? If money, if things become our security, then they replace God in our lives. They have become an idol to which we worship. The thing that we hoard in order to get and have so that we can get past our fear of losing. If we have God as the center of our lives, we do not have a fear of losing our security. Or it could take, things could be our security, or they could take the place, an inordinate place of the affections in our life. God is to be the great affection of our lives. He is to be the great goal of our lives. And if we replace Him with things, with the amassing of wealth, then we have done an unspeakable evil in creating for ourselves an idol. Things, though, are not evil. Things are just simply things. They're pieces of wood. They are books. They are video games. They are cars. They are boats. They are houses. Whatever. They are not evil. But it is what we do with them or what our attraction to them becomes can be evil or good. And fifthly, lastly, retirement and leisure are inadequate ultimate goals in life. It's okay to be retired. Let me tell you that right here, right now. It's not an evil thing to be retired. But our culture, America today, glorifies the concept of a luxurious retirement. Politicians are elected or rejected nowadays based on who will provide the best for the people's retirement. I don't know if you've noticed that, but Social Security has become quite an issue. Our life savings are invested for it. We work overtime and forego vacations to get this retirement. Yet speaking from a perspective of eternity, retirement cannot be the ultimate goal of our life. What is an ultimate goal? An ultimate goal is, this is where every ounce of my effort is going to attain this thing. That is our ultimate goal. The centerpiece of our life. And if that's retirement, we have some serious issues with how our life is to be run. Let me illustrate this. I have here a piece of string. It has a beginning. You notice the beginning point. And there's this blue section. I'm glad I found this blue tape. It makes it very, very easy to see. We begin here at birth. We end here at this knot in death. That is the span of our life on earth. And from about here to here is retirement. And this, going the whole way out of the sanctuary, around the world, infinite number of times, is eternity. How many people live for this little bit right there and ignore this? I'm going to put all of my effort, all of what I am and do right here, right now, into this. So that this is well lived. So that I can spend this at the lake. So that I can do what I want here. So that I can take three strokes off my golf game here. So whatever it is I do becomes all focused on this. And God says, thou fool. Do you realize what is to come? Do you realize the extent of eternity? This is your life. This is eternity. Got the picture? Our retirement is a rather short time, speaking from that perspective. And God calls that man who lives only for retirement, for leisure and pleasure, a fool. And so rather he instructs us, this is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself, but is not rich toward God. I think it would be much better for us to say, well, I've reached this retirement place in life, and now I finally have the time to be everything like Christ that I possibly can be. To invest my life in those who are younger. To invest my worldly possessions in His work and His ministry. So that this is well prepared for. Retirement. What a thing. What a thing. Retirement should not be the end of work. It should probably, you know, it's when you get paid less, but it should not be the end of work. But it should be the beginning of an entirely new way, a greater way to do ministry. Not take life easy, eat, drink, be merry, but take life seriously. Do well, sure, but invest in others. That's really the important thing. So what do we have here? No one knows the length of his life. You are not your bank account. God is the only security. Things themselves are not evil, but only the unhealthy love of things is evil. And retirement and leisure are inadequate ultimate goals in life. This man could have been taught quite a bit. He could have learned quite a bit about the law in his lifetime. What will you do with his example? Is the question that God asks. Be rich toward God. In whatever way that looks, in however it is that comes up in life. We don't know the length of our lives, so we rest in God, so that we live every day towards for its fullness as God would have us to live it. We are not our bank account. The things that we have in the bank do not dictate who we are. How it is that we live toward God dictates who we are. God is our only security, so we rest on His unshakable grace. Things are not evil, but they are to be used in a good way. And so we use them in the ways that God would have us to use them. And retirement and leisure are just, they're pathetic as ultimate goals of life. But they are a great opportunity. Retirement is a great opportunity for us to live to our fullest as Christ would have us to live. We have just a few moments. Does anyone have reflections of your own on this passage? I want to give you the opportunity. I feel it's good moment for some interaction.